Today, we're delving into a topic that's at the very heart of successful conference and event planning, data. In a world where every detail counts and attendee expectations continue to rise, understanding the power of your data has become more than just a game changer, it's actually a necessity. So whether you're an event planner looking to create unforgettable experiences or a conference organizer striving to optimize every aspect of your event, this episode is for you. Join us as we unravel the layers of why data is the secret sauce that distinguishes a good event from an extraordinary one.
And here we go. My name is Tess Fitzmail from iSocialX, and my partner in crime is...
Keith Johnston with, and I'm going to say Planner Wire this week, Tess.
What's the switch for?
The whole site is getting a redo and I'm almost done. But that's for another day. What do we got today?
Revamping. So data from some people is the devil. Data is key for the devil or queen, as I should say, for some people. But you know, what we wanted to do is kind of think about what event marketing is doing. Our event industry shifts and changes constantly. What our attendees, hopefully we're designing our experiences for attendees with their ideas in mind, but what they want and desire shifts and changes as well. I just heard a statistic yesterday at a conference. I'm here in Puerto Rico, and they were talking about the new generation that's upon us, that they only want, and this is dealing with tourism, they wanted all-inclusive trips, and they want spontaneous trips, which to me, that data that's pulled from that data came from Marriott had done the study. But with that particular mindset and thought process, I started really thinking and churning about this particular show because I was like, well, what does that really truly mean with the data that we're gonna gather? So we have with us today, Ross Cooper from Inspira Marketing, who is gonna help us kind of see a window into data a little differently and talk about some future tech that he's looking at. Keith, what might I have forgotten?
Well, I don't think you forgot anything, but you know, going back to the whole data thing, I just don't think Russ, I'm really glad you're here because I don't think that any event or 98% of events make good use of data. They collect it, and a lot of times it sits in a bucket and they just don't ever do anything with it, or they may use very, anecdotal looks at data. But there is a lot more that can be done.
So data's not dead? Is that what you just said? Ooh, that was three rhymes.
No, data hasn't even been born yet. But wait, we're not here for you and I, Tess. Ross, tell us what you're thinking about data.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves first, though, okay. Ross. You know, let's set the stage for them because we can get a little carried away, but our audience.
Sure. I'm at Inspira Marketing, as you said. I'm a strategist on the strategy team. I've been with them for a couple of years. I've been in the world of marketing for a number of decades. I'll say it that way. I started out my career in advertising and then evolved into marketing services. So I've been doing this for a while. And for us, we are looking at data points that will help us create more engaging experiences for our clients' brands. The creative solutions that we come up with for particular brands are based in data. We start with looking at the audience composition that we're trying to reach. We look at tour stops, if it's a tour for experiential. We look at what we create is a mindset model sometimes for our clients, where we really dig into that MRI Simmons data to understand the motivations and empathetic trigger points for a particular target audience. That then helps us concept against what elements of a marketing mix will actually provide us with the strongest results. And then, of course, there's measurement on the back end to make sure that we've accomplished what we wanted to. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'll let you keep going because you might be about to answer what I was gonna ask.
Go ahead, ask it.
Well, I was gonna say when you're looking at an event, right? You know, when should planners, when should people who are managing events, whether it's a conference or some experiential type of event, when should they start thinking about data? You know, most of them, it's they kind of collect on the way and then think about it afterward. But what should the life cycle of data be? Like, when is that actual thought born?
So it starts in our planning process early on. Once we've got a concept that's been locked, we then talk about what's the best way to measure what we're doing so that we can either improve it as we go along or know for next time how to create a stronger engagement for consumers.
Okay, so then if you're talking about from the planner's point of view, you're saying concept locked, then does that mean your concept comes into play 30 days out from an event? Are you saying 6 months out for an event, 18 months out for an event? Like, okay. Put it in planner term for us. When should we be calling you?
Okay, so all of the above is the way to answer that, because we work with different clients that have different marketing planning schedules. We might get a contact from someone who says, hey, in 60 days, I need to be here, here, and here. Can you concept, build, and execute for us within that time frame? And then we have clients who do give us 6 months, and we do have clients that give us 12 months. So it just depends on the planning cycle for the particular client. It also depends on the order of magnitude of what they want to accomplish. And let's not forget the whole budget aspect. Some brands plan a year to 18 months out, so the budgets get locked, so you can actually determine what's the best way in to tell the brand story. Others, it's a much shorter fuse. And so you just need to be flexible enough and adapt to whatever the client needs.
When planners are putting together their KPIs for their event, you know, and you're going to help them put this together, you know, do you come up with a generic, you know, is it generic or do you customize it based on the event, the client?
Or the outcomes.
Yeah. So the answer is yes. So there's a standard set of measurement that we do for KPIs that everybody wants to know about. There's the dwell time. There's the impressions. There's the engagements and that go on. But depending upon the actual brand that you're presenting, there are other aspects that you'll want to measure. So for instance, we did a tour for Walmart, who was launching a mattress that was going to be sold, an Allswell mattress. We created a tiny home tour. We actually gave consumers the opportunity to try the mattress. So one of our KPIs was laydowns. How many people actually laid down and tried the mattress? It's much, you know, which is, when you think about it, of course, that makes perfect sense. That's something you should measure because you want to be able to convert them to go in the store and buy the product. And unlike sampling a chip, it's important to sample the mattress. So that was an important aspect. When we do work for Baron Fini, the wine company, we have them taste the product. There are wine tastings, depending upon the event, you know, wine tastings, and they can purchase the product if they so desire. So it just depends on the brand. There's a standard set of measurement, but then there's also those unique aspects that help inform our success with a particular event.
And I think, you know, would you, and do you, and I'm sure you do, you know, I think that sometimes a lot of event people don't know what to ask. You know, and so I think that having someone like you to help guide them, right, you know, to what are those important questions. And I am going to circle back to the wine one, because I think, you know, when you're walking into a store, if someone is doing marketing, right, and you know, there's going to be a notice on the door that, hey, if you come in here, there's audio, video, because all that's going on. But I was thinking about an Amazon store, right, where they have all of their data, right? All of the, you know, whenever you're in there, microphones, the whole nine yards. Wouldn't it be interesting for a winemaker that after someone tries the wine, that you're recording their reactions as they walk away? That, could you imagine what you could get, what you could glean from that? Or even as an event person, what you could glean from that when someone is actually leaving the lunchroom after they've had whatever lunch it was?
Well, I think it could be for anything though. I think it could be from the session itself, right? What is the reaction? Because people, to me, it's really it's not what they tell you on the survey, because they're just trying to get through it. Sometimes some people are just trying to get through it and like, okay, yeah, I did it. It's the back channel conversation. It's the stuff I turn to my girlfriend and say, yeah, but that wasn't really great. You know, like I told someone the other day, I was at a conference, where the heck was I? I was in Cedar Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
I was
Iowa.
In Cedar Rapids. Yeah. And I'm not naming names or anything like that, but one of the keynotes came on and I said, oh no, that's why I don't like keynotes anymore. I hadn't actually sat down and watched a full on keynote from beginning to end, cause usually we're running around, right, in a long time. And I said, this is really not, and they were very cookie cutter, the old school NSA way, National Speaker Association way of presenting. And the whole thing was like, ugh. And I'm turning to my friend, communicating this as it's going on. And then we had further conversation later. That's where the truth comes out. So I think if someone would allow you to, in some form of fashion, get a window into the truth, I think that that is an interesting thing.
So with the advent of AI, we can certainly know that tech will be developed with microphones that will convert those private conversations into data that people will be able to evaluate.
And I don't even think, you don't even need to know who said it.
Correct.
No. You just need to know that it was said.
Exactly. And if you can convince your attendees that everything is anonymous for real, I think they would better, and why it would be helpful, I think they would actually agree to do it, as opposed to making it feel like a big brother. And I think oftentimes people's the approach to explaining why people are trying to get the information from you is not done well.
Yeah, there's that aspect.
So if a client is going to sit down with you and start looking at let's say their next event, right? Let's say this is a perfect world and they give you 18 months, you know, what does it look like to capture data and track that data? You know, what are you doing, or what are the data points, and what are the things that planners, and event stakeholders should be looking at for their event when they decide that this is actually something that they want to do? Or no, so I'm going to change that they need to do.
Need to do. It can start with the brand itself. Most companies, collect an immense amount of data. So the first question a planner should ask is, what data is available to evaluate that's already in-house that the brand has? You know, how can we get smarter even in the concept development phase based on the data that they've acquired? And so that's really where it starts for me. And that helps inform the brief that you're going to use to concept. And then it helps inform how you're going to evaluate what you want to present and ultimately what gets locked into place for execution.
So if I'm thinking about this, data should, in order for data to be sexy, it needs to tell a story, right? And if I am working in an organization where data is not valued, and I'm the only one who knows that there's a value in having data, what kind of journey could you help me, how could you help me or empower me, I should say, to be able to convince my team or my other stakeholders that I need to find and or create sexy data so that it can be clear for people to be able to say, oh, I get it. It's simple. It's not that big thing that's scary for me to digest or even to grasp a hold of?
There are luckily tools that are inexpensive, relatively inexpensive, that one can use to survey audiences of your liking. There's different platforms out there that allow you to create questionnaires that can go out and you can get responses back almost immediately to help inform you if the company doesn't have any resources to actually do that. If you do have some resources, there are wonderful research companies out there. There's Harris, there's Mintel, there's YouGov. Those are the bigger subscriptions that provide you with the trend data and with the information about consumer behavior that you can use to inform what you do. So there's different levels of spend, and it's what it really comes down to all the time. It comes to how much is someone willing to spend to get the information to make it right. And that's an important element of it as well. So on the one hand, you've got that ability to do these online questionnaires. And on the other end, you know, spend some money and get the trend data that's, you know, behind a paywall. It's not just Googling.
Well, and I think that if you have the budget, you know, having someone else gather data is a great way to go, because we all know about forms, right? You know, if you ever submit a form to people that you want to capture data from or collect information from, are they really going to, you know, are people going to participate? Are they going to take the time and answer those questions, right? Whereas I think sometimes when you can use an outside resource, people are a little bit more likely, rather than just getting an email from an organization that says, hey, you know, here's a survey or whatever it happens to be. A lot of times those end up, you know, you get your however many, whatever the percentages are of people that normally participate in those things. So sometimes your data could be skewed just because of that, right? You get those people that won't answer. So sometimes, yes, if you can hire someone, a third party, to capture that data for you, you can get a little bit more accurate data. Is my thinking correct or not, or is that way off base?
Your thinking is correct in terms of there is a bias in consumers who answer surveys, whether it's on email or on an iPad at an event. We're actually looking at some new, relatively new technology, because it's been developed over the past 20 years, but it's relatively new for us to test, and it's based in neuroscience. It actually uses a sensor, a wrist sensor, like an Apple Watch or a Fitbit, to measure heartbeat, and then there's an algorithm that translates the dopamine and oxytocin levels in the brain to provide us with an engagement number. How engaged was not what the consumer said, but how engaged was their brain in what they were experiencing? So it's a fascinating piece of tech, and we've just started testing it to help us understand if what we as professionals do for a living and the judgments we have in terms of experiential marketing do in fact engage and make a difference. But now we're using science to read what consumers' reactions are beyond what they say they are.
Go ahead, Keith. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's actually fascinating, right? Because so you arrive at an event, I'm an attendee, and you would actually give me a wearable that I would put on.
Yes.
Now, people are going to want to know why, right? And I think that as long as it can collect some other data, like, you know, where people are going and what they're doing while they're at the event, that's a great way to position it, right? You know, this is for your continuing education credit or whatever, if they're walking through a convention center. But I actually think that this is a case where attendees would think it was kind of cool, right? You know, and you know, it's going to help us provide, you know, better sessions, better whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. You know, my focus is on conferences, so I always trend toward that. But I think that's fascinating. You know, when I was at Soldier Field a few years ago for Coldplay, right? You're walking in and they hand you a thing to put on your wrist and you do it. So people will do that.
Yeah. They will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they will.
The interesting thing from the data that this group has done, they've done a lot of testing with events and with conferences, and you know one of the outcomes. And when you read about it, you say, oh yeah, that makes sense. But now here's the data to back it up. It's really important that the presentations in all of these different conferences be shorter rather than longer. So there's an optimal sweet spot because the brain disengages after a while. And that's what they've learned. There's an inflection point where people just tune out.
And what's the inflection point? At what time are you saying?
Depending upon the topic, on average, it's around 20 minutes.
That's what I was thinking. 20.
It is amazing. We used to have, do you remember, you know, years ago, you'd have those sessions, right? They would go on for like hours, right. You know, and they might even put a break in the middle of it. The session was so long. And the trend now is much shorter. And you do see happier attendees, you know, literally just walking around, you can see them. They have a little bit more bounce in their step at 4 o'clock than they used to.
And the other aspect is, you know, with everyone having a cell phone, you can make the experience more interactive. You can actually involve and engage the audience.
Yeah.
By you know, typically the conferences or the event has an app that has been developed. There's, you know, technology out there where you can put questionnaires out and have people participate that way without the app. So it just making it more fun for someone to sit and get involved is a lot of what it's about as well.
Well, and I think, you know, if you want people to participate, right, if you want people to be a guinea pig, most people, like, I don't have a problem with it, right? You're trying to make the event better. And I think that, and you couldn't share all of the data, but do you recommend for clients to share the data with attendees? And again, depending on what the data is, right? You know, I think that it's always really important. If you come back and you make a major change to a conference schedule, for example, for the following year, and now all of the sessions are 20 minutes, right? With a 30-minute break in between, some radical or an hour break. I mean, it's really cool to say, you know what, we did this because this is what you said you wanted.
Yeah, that's a really important point for selling the next year's participation. You've actually listened to what the attendees had to say. I think a lot of times when you get that email survey after an event, you're not quite sure what's being done with the data. And, you know, the affirmation that people listened and then modified to make your experience better, that's going to up the engagement and attendance level for a particular event, if it's something that's paid like a conference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had, you know, a few years ago, we had a client that knew they needed to change something. They kind of weren't sure what it was, you know, again, they weren't collecting a ton of data or the data they should be collecting. And they decided to go do some radical changes to their conference sessions. And they did some shorter, they did this. The following year when they implemented that, it was a disaster. And not a disaster in a horrible way. I mean, it was, you know, the surveys came back, people really, really weren't happy. What they didn't realize was their attendees didn't want those things to change. It was the evening events and other things. So they made all these changes to the conference schedule. And I guess where I'm trying to go with this is, if they had been looking at the data as you propose, you know, they wouldn't have run into that problem, right? They would have known that, yes, it is actually the sessions are fine. People are engaged and they're happy and they're paying attention. And it's the other events that they're not happy with. So I do think that getting those real time, you know, updates on sentiment are important if you can collect them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have found that, that when we do, when we create experiences and we're on a tour, we have found that you can't underestimate the talent that you've cast to represent the brand. A brand ambassador, a tour manager, those eyes and ears on the ground are invaluable in collecting real-time data that with a feedback loop helps you make the experience better on the spot or at the next stop of a tour. it's really, really essential that you have the right talent representing the brand and that they're trained in a particular way so that you have the access to that type of data and can enhance what you're doing.
Go ahead, Keith.
No, go ahead, Tess.
I was going to say, I'd love for you, Ross, to give us a sweet spot on like your perfect client from the event perspective. Like, what did you do for them? What were their really great takeaways? Like where they were to where they ended up being. And, you know, what was kind of innovative about that for them?
So we've got a tour running now for one of the car companies, and we're introducing a new model. And we created an experience that includes a virtual test drive with an Oculus headset. The experience was designed in a certain way to engage consumers and educate. We know that there was just a recent study from Y-Pulse that 81% of Gen Z really, really want to be educated by brands. On information. And not surprising that the Gen Z generation is interested in engaging with brands in that fashion and then talking about it on social media and whatnot. The tour that I'm talking about, we use that real life data from the tour manager to help inform how to make the experience stickier for us so that the dwell time for everyone who came into our footprint would increase and their engagement with the brand ambassadors and the conversations they would have would be more in depth. So it going back to that point of the real time, real life data from people who represent the brand and who you've hired is really essential for success in creating the right type of experience.
And that's a really important point, right? Because, you know, as we went into this, we were talking about technology, when there are amazing buckets of data that you can collect from human intel, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because those people that are boots on the ground have the ability to change the situation in a moment. You know, how they interact with an attendee that maybe is not having a great time can totally turn that situation around. You know, and then they can communicate that to other members to avoid the same thing happening. So you can take that one little data point that can have an immediate impact across right. The whole event.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can augment that with tech, put beacons okay. within the footprint and track the journey that consumers are following. There's tech out there now that pings cell phones. So you can actually see the traffic flow. And see where people start, where they exit in a particular footprint. Mm-hmm. And that helps you design better, a better experience with that type of information. But it also informs you because, they were in this aspect of the journey. And look, they spent, you know, 7 minutes here. Wow. What went on during those 7 minutes? Who was the brand ambassador during that time frame? The data is all collected anonymously. So you're looking at data that just helps inform what you should do next time, what you should do even that day.
And it's really funny when you look at things like that in real time or even afterward. You know, we had a big event that took up one whole floor of the Marriott in Chicago, and it was set up nightclub style, right? And there were different activities, and we found that people they all congregated in one of two areas. Right. They mm-hmm. were either in the very, very quiet spot or they were in the big, we had set up a big karaoke room. Right. So they were all in those two spots. Well, there were three other locations that were virtually empty. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, for the following year, we changed the whole thing up. Right. And now it's just karaoke or quiet.
Interesting.
You know, so again, that is, you know,
that's called listening. That's called active listening.
Yes.
I'm bringing up my psych days. So I know we talked to you mentioned a little bit about anonymous data in a sense, the people are anonymous in a sense. But you also do run into some cases sometimes where data can be skewed in one direction or another for, you know, whatever interests are, you know, at play at the time. If you have seen that, which I'm sure you have in your world at some point in time, what kinds of things can you do to kind of help the process and maybe widen the data gap? Changing the structure of the information that you're given to try to alleviate bias in crafting the experience on getting the data to begin with. Because I think that does happen, and I think that it can be unconscious sometimes. But I think that there are times where we can do better about the data points that we're choosing to select. So hopefully that wasn't too compounded, but
yeah. And so if we're talking about post survey, when someone is engaged with a brand and then we do an exit survey, mm-hmm. To understand the pros and cons of the experience, get a net promoter score value out of the participant. It's really important not to be judgmental in the questions you ask. There's a standard set of questions that you know, get asked to help us understand the different aspects of engagement. And this is separate from the neuroscience tech. And so what we do is we ask the same set of questions for every client. And then we augment that set with what a client might want to learn as well. Mm-hmm. About the particular experience. So there's the general questions, and then there's can be sometimes more specific questions that we ask. And so a good researcher will keep the bias out of the structure of those questions. You don't want to lead the witness, obviously. You want to get data that's going to be meaningful in a way that has not been prejudgmental, I guess, about the way the survey was structured. So it's important to take it from that perspective, which again makes it even better when you've got technology that can alleviate all of that bias, right? Mm-hmm. And it just takes the bias out of the equation. The other thing that's interesting is when you establish where you want to engage your target. It's one thing to be in a Walmart parking lot with an experience that drives to retail, get them in the store, get them to buy, very transactional in a sense, learn about the brand, experience the fun, the entertainment, and the reason why you should consider it, and then here, go buy it. Different from being at a balloon festival where you're doing wine tasting, or a street fair. Those are all different instances where you just have to be mindful of the frame of mind for the consumer and mm-hmm. and what their expectations might be.
Thank you.
Yeah, so here's a question, and I know we're coming up on our time. What aren't we asking? Yeah. I have never claimed to be the smartest guy in the room.
When it comes to data, I tell you.
Well, especially in this group, I am definitely not the smartest one here. You know, what aren't we asking that planners should know?
Yeah.
So one of the things that would be helpful is when you're designing a marketing plan and an experience is part of that planning process, it's important to at least talk about the need for data collection that's not anonymous. Ideally, you'd like to get a consumer into some type of nurturing funnel that converts them from this awareness level all the way through the commitment to be a brand advocate for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that takes time, obviously. And certainly people who walk through your experience or engage with the brand are at different points in that funnel. But it's a mistake not to try and collect the data that then puts them into the communications flow that will eventually make them a loyal consumer to your brand.
Got it.
I was actually thinking about that in my head, and I'm like, you know what? There are, you know, people are at different points in their own journeys.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at 50 people walking, you know, going back to the Walmart analogy, right? If you have 50 people walking toward the Walmart doors, all of them are in a different place. Mm-hmm. Right. Especially when it comes to a particular brand that might be in the store doing maybe an activation in the store, right? You know, let's say it's T-Mobile, right? Whatever. They're in the store. You know, you've got four people that have never heard of them, three that are customers, four that are customers of a competitor. And yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could know that?
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly where that's. I pause because my brain is going, whoa.
Yeah.
And give you, you know, that I've not seen that, but it would be wonderful if you could somehow bucket based on just that, those different buckets that you mentioned, and then customize the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. It really would be, but that requires thought. But you know, there's interesting. I think was it Nordstrom's? I could be wrong, but I think Nordstrom's did a little bit of that in the sense where you could walk into the store and you'd have an experience where it kind of showed you based on your interests what department you needed to kind of go through, so it sent you in that area. It was a very interesting kind of concept that they did, but people are going to have to really truly as consumers relinquish the fear around allowing us to gain that information. You know, we've just been so concerned about security in ways in which that some of that information and data is, I think, scary for people. So I think there's a huge fear aspect that you kind of have to get through, even when you're coming to getting information around your event.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So Keith, you want to wrap it up? Any last thoughts for us?
Too many thoughts, right? You know, you already have data. It's time to look at that data. You need to collect data. It's time to think about how you're going to collect your data. This is such a huge subject. I don't think that enough events, conferences, you know, experiential marketing events, anything. I think that 90% of them don't do a great job with data. I think there are 10% that do an amazing job with data, but 90% could do better. Now's the time to start.
Yeah. Yes. So Ross, please give us some closing words, some inspiration from Inspira. You like that, right?
Well, measurement makes you smarter. I'll say it that. And it helps you create better ideas for your brand. It helps you engage consumers at a higher level. It helps build the business. So it's not something to ignore, and it's something that you should embrace.
And I will say thank you so very much for being with us today, Ross. We really, truly appreciate it, because it's really a subject. Like I said, people think data is the devil, and they can't, as you said, they avoid it. And they're like, yeah, that's that thing over there that only those nerdy people can deal with. And that'll be nice for me to get, but I don't know how to deal with it. So thank you so much for sharing. We appreciate it. This is the Event Tech Pull-Up. My name is Tess Vismail for iSocialX, and my partner in crime is...
That Guy Keith.
That Guy Keith. See, he went from PlannerWire to That Guy Keith. You all know every time I try to get him to do it on sync, on time, doesn't work. It never worked. It's okay. But thank you. Please share this with your friends and your fellow event profs. Take care.